This 570 WWNC podcast is brought to you by Applied Solutions Group, web solutions and information technology for your business. Visit them at www.appliedtns.com.
The following takes place between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Let me have your attention for a moment.
Stay calm.
What is it?
A life form of its own.
Head straight for us.
Be afraid.
The voice on the radio.
More than just a man.
This is something much.
Everything will be all right.
More dangerous.
Dangerous.
Stand by to transmit.
Receiving you. Over.
Now hear this.
Buckle your seatbelts.
Take a stand with Matt Mattel.
Rock and roll!
Woo-hoo!
To get in on the conversation, dial 240-9962 or toll-free 800-570-9962. Now, live from the Matt Cave, it's Matt Mattan.
All right, welcome back for the second hour of today's edition of Take a Stand. I am your happy and humble host, Matt Mattan. Agnes Cheeks, still the engineer and producer of the program. Despite her brilliance, she still hangs around crud like me. All right, so we have a very different hour of the program. There's been so many conversations about, you know, oh, I'm so frustrated with fill in the blank. Democratic Party, Republican Party, parties in general, government, state government, local government, federal government. There's all this frustration out there. And so we have to offer to you, for consideration, and I'll be going through an awareness exercise here myself in learning about the Constitution Party. We have representatives here in the studio with us. First, the State Director of the Constitution Party for North Carolina, Al Pisano. Welcome to Take a Stand. Glad to have you on.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the Constitution Party.
Well, the Constitution Party is an organization. It's in North Carolina. Basically, we're trying to get back to holding government to the chains of the original Constitution, the Bill of Rights. We think that the big two parties, the Democrats and Republicans, have kind of forgot about that document. A lot of people haven't read it, and I think that's the problem. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to educate people, and we're trying to tell people there is a different choice out there, the Constitution Party, and we are the organization that wants to hold elected officials accountable to the Constitution.
All right, and I'm pulling up the national website right now, constitutionparty.com, and I'm going to base some of the conversation that we have as we go through the conversation in this hour of the program on things that are on there as far as the national platform and things. Now, I know with the Libertarian Party, they have a national platform that they vote on in their annual meetings and things, but then on the state level, they'll have separate things that they focus on beyond that. How is the structure of the Constitution Party nationally and then filtered down to the state level?
It's very similar. There is a national Constitution Party organization. They have their own structure. They're an independent organization from us, or I should say that the states are really independent affiliates of that national organization. They do have their national party platform, and we also have our own platform, and they're very similar. They're almost identical.
All right. Now, I'm looking through the page that says the platform and everything, and it's pretty much just listing three source documents, historical documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights. I may not have gotten to it yet, but that's all I'm finding on the party platform page so far.
Pretty much. What more do you need? That's the way we think.
All right. I finally got to one. A little bit down here, and we'll get to, now that I found where it is, we'll get to some of those specific issues. But I also want to introduce another guest in the studio, and that is Mike West, not the one that people usually hear from Hearts with Hands that's on the program with us from time to time, but the Mountain Director of the Constitution Party. Thanks for being with us on Take a Stand.
It's a pleasure to be here today.
All right, and what I wanted to ask you, aside from like the structural side of the party and its place in the political conversation in North Carolina now and where you hope to go in the future, I want to ask you on a personal level, what motivated you to get involved with the Constitution Party for the Mountain Region?
Well, I feel more and more disenfranchised. You know, I feel
if I support the Republicans, they have another agenda that I'm not even aware of at the national level. I feel like I'm not at home in my own country. I think that my rights have been taken from me in a major way. And I don't want to see the Bill of Rights disappear. And I don't want to sell my rights to the government for a few welfare handouts. I was born a free citizen of the greatest country in the world, and that's the way I want to die. So I'm here to represent that. I don't want it to all disappear.
All right, now back to Al. How long has the Constitution Party been trying to organize efforts here in the state of North Carolina? The Libertarian Party's fight for ballot access has been a well-documented and slightly covered story. I won't say well-covered story, because it's not. If it was well-covered, there'd be a backlash for reform of ballot access in the state of North Carolina.
There needs to be.
There absolutely does. It's 500 times easier to get on the ballot in Iraq than it is in North Carolina. How long has the Constitution Party been in operation, organized operation in the state of North Carolina, and how widespread or organized is it?
Originally, there were a group of people, I believe, back in 1999, roughly, that got together. I was not part of that original group. And it kind of stayed just almost a loose organization of like-minded individuals. There was no real structure at the time. Last spring, a few of us got together and said, okay, look, it's time that we go ahead. The time's right. We need to go ahead and start getting this organizational structure in place. We had a state convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, back in August of 2008. We elected an executive committee for the state. We had our first executive committee meeting in November, and we've had several others since. Since that time, we've had, it's getting organized in, right now, 10 counties throughout the state. I'm not sure the exact number of members that have joined with us. It's over 100 already that we've had. We're new, but the information's getting out about what we stand for. And the reason why we're getting so popular is because we are giving information to the people that has, I think, long been forgotten. The founding fathers had it right. They listed it. They gave us the ability to guide ourselves, and now it's our responsibility to do that. The decades preceding now, they have gone astray from those documents and those principles. That's why we got founded. That's why we're getting popular. That's why we know that we will get on that ballot, and hopefully we're going to change the ballot access laws. That's another point that at some point during this conversation I hope you address, because I think if North Carolinians knew how their rights are being denied in this state with the ballot access laws, they would be ready to take up the pitchforks to find out and change these laws.
Well, and I think the percentage of awareness you're going to have with the people you're talking to right now is going to be higher than other segments of the population you're going to find. We talk about these issues quite frequently, but also in Asheville itself, you've got unaffiliated voters, for instance, outnumber Republicans and catching up on Democrats. We had a very public fight not too long ago where the majority on city council tried to change election laws just before the cutoff dates so that unaffiliated voters would not have equal access to the nonpartisan elections. And for the first time that we've been able to find in state history, the people of Asheville successfully overturned a city charter amendment by petition and then referendum. First time we can find in state history it's actually been successful. So the awareness of the inequality of ballot access and voting rights in the state of North Carolina is something that people in Asheville are very aware of and very up in arms about when it happens. And then also, the fact that I myself am unaffiliated and take every opportunity I can to point out some of the inadequacies. Like, for instance, despite the fact that I'm a veteran, I can't serve at the polls because I'm not a Democrat or a Republican,
right,
unless I have a babysitter and a written sponsor from either the Democrat Party or the Republican Party. Things like the fact that unaffiliated voters are outnumbering Republicans in Asheville. The Board of Elections has two Republicans on it, three Democrats, no unaffiliated voters.
Correct.
You know, these are the kind of inequities that we talk about on the program pretty regularly.
It's a rigged game.
It's a totally rigged game, and that's not even getting into the gerrymandering of the districts, which the poker chips get traded back and forth behind closed doors on. Well, we'll take this district on here, get the district maps out. This one's going to be, you know, this one's going a blue chip. That's going to be Democrat. All right, well, we have this many chips as red Republicans. We're going to protect this one. It ends up being six competitive districts in the entire state.
Right.
All right. Now, right now, when people go into a Board of Elections office, they can't register Constitution Party.
No, they cannot.
So how do you communicate and organize and keep track of people that are becoming members and volunteers within the Constitutional Party as it starts to get its feet under it and getting organized here in the state of North Carolina?
Well, of course we're maintaining our membership list, so we know who's joining with us. Also, if you go to our website, constitutionpartync.com, if you click on that site, you can click on the section of tab that says ballot access. Gives you all the information about what you were just talking about, the inequalities, and basically what we think is unconstitutional according to North Carolina's Constitution that calls for free elections. We know that free elections did not mean you have to pay a door price to get in to vote. But it explains all that there. We've also got a petition that we've started with the State Board of Elections that North Carolinians can sign the petition to basically allow the Constitution Party to have its opportunity to represent North Carolinians. All they got to do is they can download that. They have to sign it. There are some regulations with it. If you are in whatever county you live in, you can only sign the petition with that county's name on it. And then you send it into the Board of Elections. They certify that you're a certified registered voter. And then they count that.
And what's the time frame on that? There's a limited window from when you start to when you have to have it all in, right?
That's correct. And it's funny with our limited experience so far with the State Board of Elections. It's kind of like depending on when you call and who answers the phone is oftentimes what the answer is that you'll get.
Yeah. Welcome to the ballot access fight for people that are not going to subscribe to Democrat or Republican, right, in the state of North Carolina.
Well, we feel that basically the voter in North Carolina, their rights are being denied, and they're basically only given two choices to choose from. We believe in the free market of political ideas. And the only way to do that, it works in business, the free market with competition. And the only way that we're going to change a lot of this mess that's going on and politicians that are voting for things that are unconstitutional is to allow more parties and more candidates in to the political process. That's the free market of political ideas. Competition makes everybody better. Everybody benefits from that.
Well, and there's an extra hurdle in North Carolina in that if you're not in the circle of leadership in Raleigh, doesn't matter if you're a Republican or even a Democrat, you don't get access.
Absolutely.
Closed door conversations about budgets and everything, and it's just 15 or 20 people that make all the decisions. Even Democrats can't get into those if they don't play along with the leaders. We'll continue on with the Constitution Party right after this on Take a Stand. Welcome back to Take a Stand, and we are taking a walk down the Constitution Party lane here on Take a Stand this hour of the program, and glad to have our guests in the studio, Michael West, who's the Mountain Director for the Constitution Party of North Carolina, also Al Pisano, who is the State Director for the Constitution Party, and I have to say, too, I pulled up the State Party website. It's better than the National Party website.
Yeah, we think so.
It really is. I was like, well, that looks like it'd be the national one, and the national one looked like it'd be the state one, so good work on that, whoever is taking taking care of your website.
We got good people.
It's very easy.
We got good people working.
Very easy to navigate around, and I found the platform just like that. But ConstitutionPartyNC.com is the website for the state party. All right, now, so we've talked about ballot access, talked about the formation of the Constitution Party in North Carolina. Right at its genesis right now. This is something brand new, just getting organized in the state of North Carolina. Of course, you have a major uphill fight with ballot access in the state of North Carolina. Have you gotten to the point yet, or is it premature to start talking as a state director about targeting different races, different districts and things? Because there's a lot of races for the legislature that are unopposed, where people just don't even have anyone run against them. Then there's also a lot of municipal elections that are nonpartisan that a Constitution Party member could get on the ballot just by going down and filling out the form.
That's correct. And one of the things that we're doing, we have people that are contacting us interested in the party and being candidates for different offices, like you said. With the different type of office, the State Board of Election, of course, has different requirements as to the amount of signatures that a candidate is required to go out and get in order for them to run for that office. I know like a federal thing has so many, and a state office and a local one has different requirements. And right off the bat, I can't tell you what all of those were. But I know that to run for like Congress or something, it's somewhere close to 80,000 signatures or something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. All right, so we're going to start going through the platform here, and either of you gentlemen can jump in and kind of expand on it. And the first one, anti-socialism. Not antisocial, but anti-socialism. Antisocial would be a bad thing for a political party
Correct.
Having a platform.
Correct.
But anti-socialism, I think that pretty much says it all right there. But it says on the platform for the state party, it says, we assert that we are opposed to federal aid, foreign aid, and national health care. We deny the assumption that civil government has the authority to set wages and prices. So doing so is inconsistent with principles of individual liberty and the free market.
Correct.
Care to expand on that at all?
Well, we just believe that on the federal level, the Constitution limits what the government lawfully can do. It doesn't say anywhere in there that the government can impose on a local businessman how much he has to pay a worker. The free market can dictate that. It doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution where we are allowed to be involved in what is essentially international socialism by taking money from American taxpayers to give to foreign countries. There's nowhere in the Constitution that says that. There's nowhere in the Constitution that requires taxpayers to give up their hard-earned money to the government for the government to dole out to special groups of people that they deem are worthy of the individual worker's money. The Constitution does not give the federal government that authority.
Now, what do you say to Republicans out there and say, well, man, you're talking about the Republican Party. That's what the Republican Party does. Well, you just said it's the same position as the Republican Party. What do you say to them?
I say to them, read your Constitution. And if you're involved and you're following the Constitution, then your answer's clear. The problem is, and the reason why so many people that are joining with the Constitution Party that were former Republicans is because they're saying they're no longer following the Constitution. They haven't been for a long time, and now we want to join up with an organization that its guidepost is the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence.
All right, now, I typically rebel against labels and things on the show, but for the sake of expediency in conversation, I'll just accept general definitions of a few labels to help move the conversation along. What you just described would be something that most people would consider a conservative point of view and would attract conservatives. The next item on the platform, I think, might attract people that might call themselves progressives or liberals, and that is on the issue of national sovereignty and avoiding foreign entanglements and the use of troops and the process that should be followed there. It says the United States is properly a free and sovereign republic, which should strive to live in peace with all nations without interfering in their internal affairs and without permitting their interference in ours. We are therefore unalterably opposed to entangling alliances via treaties or any other form of commitment which compromises our national sovereignty or commits us to intervention in foreign wars. That's directly in counter to what people saw over the last 8 years with the prior administration.
Well, it's gone beyond just the past 8 years. This has been going on for a long time. You know, that those words, if people want to go to the Constitutional Party website and look on the historical documents section, so go to our section, click on George Washington's farewell address, read what his warning said about constant entangling alliances.
And political parties.
Obviously, you've read it.
I have.
And you could see where we've taken that from.
All right. So we go from attract conservatives, probably attract some conservatives, but also liberals as far as our role in the world, back to what's probably more of a conservative viewpoint. I feel like we're playing a tennis match here, but yet it's all focused on the Constitution. Imagine that. The right to bear arms is inherent in the right of self-defense, defense of the family, the defense against tyranny conferred on the individual and the community by our Creator to safeguard life, liberty, and property, as well as to help preserve the independence of the nation. The right to keep and bear arms is guaranteed by the Second Amendment to the Constitution. It may not properly be infringed upon or denied.
Correct.
Is this how this interview is going to go all day? Yes, yes. Do you feel that the Second Amendment is under assault today in America?
Oh, absolutely. Why? I mean, if you go to any gun show, I mean, my goodness, you're going to wait in line for hours just to get into the places. That is because people are afraid. They're afraid of what they see as a federal government that is growing so strong and threatening to their liberties that, yeah, they're saying, I'm going to get the means to go ahead and still protect myself and defend myself and my property before that's taken away.
There's been a lot of conversations in several state legislatures, including South Carolina and Tennessee, of all places, have talked about, and also the Durham City Council on their legislative agenda for this year, had ammunition accountability legislation seeking to put identifiers on ammunition and registering. And there are conversations about having to get a concealed carry permit in order to buy ammunition in the state of North Carolina, these different kind of things. What would your interpretation of the role of state-level government be when it comes to registration of guns or ammunition?
I'm against registration of guns. I think the Constitution Party, for the most part, if you weigh the benefits of gun registration compared to the potential dangers of gun registration leading to confiscation, leading to enslavement of the people by a tyrannical government, I think that it's obvious that the registration of guns is more dangerous.
All right, Al, I want to bring you, Michael, I want to bring you in on this one as far as Western North Carolina goes, because there's a great rich heritage and history of gun ownership. As a matter of fact, a lot of families, they can pull out some rifles and muskets and things that belong to their great-great-grandfathers, and I'll be if they still don't work. What kind of feedback or reaction do you get when you're talking to people about the Constitution Party when it comes to gun rights issues in Western North Carolina?
Well, let me say, my father was never more than 15 feet from a pistol his entire life. On two or three different occasions, it saved his life. I was raised with guns 15 feet away. I've never shot a person. I respect hunting rights, but it's people who go crazy that with a gun that kill people. It's not the gun itself.
So is that the reaction you get from people when you talk about the Constitution Party or about Second Amendment rights and everything like that? That seems to be kind of the current thing that you'll hear from people say, look, you know, it's the owner, it's the gun owner problems, not the gun itself. And so, you know, why continue to regulate and restrict people who follow the laws when the criminals are still going to be criminals? They're still going to do what they want to do.
Well, the first thing that Castro did was round up all the guns. First thing that Gaddafi did was go round up all the guns. You know, if these people are not trying to take our freedom away from us, why are they uncomfortable with us having guns?
Well, you almost sound like you're reading from the Declaration of Arms and talking about what they did in Boston during colonial times. Private property rights, the next one. We affirm the Fourth Amendment right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, including arbitrary or de facto registration, general and unwarranted electronic surveillance, national computer databases, and it goes on from there to list many, many other things. We assert our opposition to using eminent domain to take private property through the force of government from one private party to give to another. That's something that across the board in North Carolina, there's great support for a constitutional amendment in North Carolina to make sure that eminent domain is never used for that purpose. And despite broad support, bipartisan, it doesn't get through.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you know, people need to realize the only difference between a free man and a slave is the ability for the free man to own private property. And basically, what would happen if you as an individual came over to my house and said, I like your car, and I can get more money for that car than you can, so I'm going to take it. Well, they'd call it armed robbery if you brandished a weapon or threatened me, and larceny of auto, right? But yet, when the government goes to a private individual and says, we've got another private individual who's a developer over here that wants your property, and we're going to condemn your property because we can get more tax money from it, from this person, and we're going to use the process of the government to steal your property without just compensation.
Yeah, but they'll get more property tax.
Well, that's what I said. That's the reason they used. That's what they used up in the Kelo decision.
That's right. All right, and we're going to continue our conversation right after this break. The phone lines are now open. If you have a question or a comment for these gentlemen from the Constitution Party of North Carolina, just getting things started, then you can call in 240-9962 in Asheville. Everywhere else, toll free 1-800-570-9962. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Take a Stand here on News Radio 570 WWNC and AM 1400 The Peak. We are talking with representatives from the Constitution Party of North Carolina. Never heard of it? Well, it's because they've just started to get their feet underneath them and getting organized across the state. They've got regional people that are coordinating volunteers and taking memberships, getting petitions signed. The Constitution Party of North Carolina's website is Constitution Party NC. And we have Michael West, the mountain director for the Constitution Party, and Al Pisano, who is the state director of the Constitution Party, in the studio with us. We're taking your phone calls with questions or comments. 1-800-570-9962 is the toll-free number. If you're in Asheville, dial locally 240-9962. And I've saved the last three items on the platform for now, because this is an area where I find myself in disagreement constitutionally with the platform of the Constitution Party. And the first one is on the traditional family. It says, we assert that the traditional nuclear family, consisting of one man and one woman joined by marriage, is the healthiest and most secure relationship and form of family in which to create a stable and prosperous environment to establish and build strong families. We believe it is the best form of family and should be encouraged by law. I'll just say my thing, and then you can respond to it. I don't think it's the business of government, period, when it comes to marriage. That's something between individuals and their God and their church. And with religious freedom, if there's a church that says this is what we believe, that's between them, their congregation, and their maker. I don't believe that it is a constitutional duty for government to start defining relationships and contracts between different people based on their gender for the purpose of taxes, which is what government marriage is. So there's my little spiel on it.
Well, I you're right. We're going to disagree on that. I think that it is absolutely important when it comes to inheritance, when it comes to legitimacy of children, when it comes to division of property, when it comes to a lot of legal issues that, no, should the government be saying whether or not you can marry this woman or not? Absolutely not. That's up between you and that woman. And, of course, their church, if they're a part of a church, goes ahead and performs the ceremony for their faith. But I think we would have utter chaos when it comes to property issues and things like that, who the children are, their legal parents are, issues like that, if there was not some officially recognized document on file with the government to show these two people are married legally when it comes to property division, the legitimacy of children, inheritance laws, things like that. And what I'm saying is I think that's very important in the issue of the government being involved to do that sort of thing for documentation purposes.
All right, and perhaps we could have a full-out debate on it some other time. I don't want to monopolize it. I know callers are waiting on hold, and they want to get in here on some different things. Another one is sanctity of life. The preborn child whose life begins at fertilization is a human being created in God's image. The first duty of the law is to prevent the shedding of innocent blood. It is, therefore, the duty of all civil governments to secure and to safeguard the lives of the preborn. And then it goes on from there and expands even further. The question I would have on this is, do you have any separation at all between federal regulations on this or state regulations on this, as far as the Constitution goes, and, you know, the self-determination of people within states? Or rather, and this is where I lean, there's a legal definition for when death is. There's no legal definition for when life actually begins. And if you had a legal definition of when life begins, then if someone has a situation where a decision is made or something happens, then it might be a whole myriad of things. It may be manslaughter, it may be murder, it may be circumstantial, it may be self-defense. There's a lot of different categories that could fall into the determination of a jury of peers.
Okay. This is one of the issues that I would have to say that the Constitution Party of North Carolina and the National would say does fall under the purview of the federal government protection over the states. And the reason being is we have the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution guarantees that every citizen has the right to life, liberty, and property and due process of law. Okay. We also live in a republic. Most people today want to say we live in a democracy. That's a terrible form of government, probably one of the worst. And
never
I'm sure
works.
You know that. Never works, never will. We live in a republic. And the Constitution guarantees certain things under the Republic, and that is the guarantee of life, the innocent life. So what we're saying in this issue with the 14th Amendment, that it does hold the states accountable, that to go ahead and kill an innocent human life without due process violates their constitutional right under the 14th Amendment.
All right, and the last one here, religious freedom, which I can't argue against religious freedom, but there's a specific thing in the platform that I have a different take on, and so we'll just get through this and then we'll get to the callers. Article 1 of the Bill of Rights reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That's pretty straightforward. That's
yes, it
what
is.
It says. Our Constitution grants no authority to the federal government either to grant or deny the religious expressions of the people in any place. Both the First and Tenth Amendments forbid such tyranny. We call upon all branches of government to cease their attacks on the religious liberties of the people in the states, regardless of the forum in which these liberties are exercised. And here's the part where I have a different interpretation. We assert that any form of taxation on churches and other religious organizations is a direct and dangerous step toward state control of the church. Such intrusion is prohibited by the Constitution and must be halted. My take on that is that the exemption of taxes for churches is actually a way of getting them to conform with government. And you're seeing it start to happen in other countries. You're seeing it start to happen here, that if churches get more assertive in their communities, they're being threatened with loss of their 501c3 status. And I have seen firsthand churches that will not address issues in fear of losing tax-exempt status. They have too big of a school associated or daycare program associated with the church, and they back off because they don't want to lose that tax-exempt status.
Well, you just made the argument right there. When did the 501c3 program come into existence in this country? Came under the Johnson administration. Why was that? Because people from the pulpit were screaming out against what he was about, what he wanted to do. So what he basically said is, okay, we're going to tax churches, and you can get a tax exemption, but basically the church has to follow the rules of the federal government. Even though the concept of the separation of church and state is nowhere ever mentioned in the Constitution. I've looked for it, so if there's anybody out there that can find
it,
please
let me know.
Right, of course
it was Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptist.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. People think it's in there. The whole concept in that letter, and I'm sure you've read it, mm-hmm. I've read it, was basically him assuring those people that there is a protective hedge around the church. Because the Founding Fathers, as you know from reading, believed that the free press would keep the government honest, and the pulpits would keep the government honest. So they wanted to make sure there was a protection around the church from fear of the government coming in there telling them what they could preach about and what they couldn't preach about. It didn't work the other way. They expected it to work the other way.
Yeah, see, what I would rather see is no property taxes on anybody.
I agree with you.
Churches.
100%.
I've always asserted, having studied Thomas Jefferson's writings and the writings of people that were close to him, that if he knew the way that his one sentence would be utilized from that letter, the context of what he said was actually separation of state and church.
Correct.
Which is very different than the way it's been interpreted.
Absolutely.
Today. All right, we're going to continue our conversation with these gentlemen from the Constitution Party. We have people that have been on hold. We're going to get to your phone calls. We continue with Take a Stand right after this. Stay tuned.
This is Take a Stand.
I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore, I want them to turn black.
I see the girls with my dress.
Welcome back to Take a Stand, and our guests have graciously agreed to stay on for another hour into the next hour. As long as people want to call in and ask questions or offer comments, they're going to stick around into the next hour, even though we were only scheduled for 1 hour. And our guest, Michael West, the Mountain Director of the Constitution Party of North Carolina, and Al Pisano, the State Director of the Constitution Party, in the studio with us. Let's go to the phone lines. People have been waiting very patiently. And David, you're first up. Welcome.
The president just appointed a czar or emperor over insurance. So you men be sure and keep the insurance paid up. But where in the Constitution does it give the president the authority to appoint czars or emperors to oversee the various segments of the economy and of American life?
Well, as far as I've read, Dave, nowhere. And you know, to all the listeners out there, I remember the term czar being used in a former place that was known as Russia. It's kind of disconcerting that all of a sudden we're coming up using these terminologies as czar when the federal government keeps going beyond its constitutional bounds, don't you think?
Yeah. All right, let's go to Jim now, calling in from Rockingham. Welcome to Take a Stand. Oh, man, 1 second later, that was him just hanging up. He gave up. All right, let's go to Tim then. Welcome to Take a Stand.
Hi, Matt.
Hi.
I want to thank your guest for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I'd like to ask your guest a simple yes or no question, and that is, regardless of what it says in the Constitution, do you personally believe in the strict separation of church and state?
Who wants to take that one first?
Well, he wanted a yes or no question.
Oh, and he hung up too. Yeah, he wants to know yes or no, regardless of whether it's documented in the Constitution or not, do you believe in a separation of church and state?
I believe in the concept according to the way we talked about it. So if what he's talking about is in the concept of what you and I were discussing previously, it would be yes.
Well, the separation of state and church.
Right.
However, I do believe that our laws were founded on the Judaic Christian principles and the Ten Commandments. And I think when we get too far from the Ten Commandments, we're in deep trouble. You know, don't take, don't steal. Well, what if the government wanted to take your stuff and give it to somebody else? They have no problem with it. All that's gone.
But is that to say, and we've had this debate on the program before, is that to say, though, that we are, when talking about government, a Christian government nation?
No, I would not, personally, I wouldn't pass out by edict any religion. I believe in freedom of religion. But that's not to negate our Christian heritage or throw it out in the bathwater, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, but everyone's freedom, even to be an atheist or whatever, to me is okay.
Well, as far as if we're going along those lines, it'd be foolish for us to not acknowledge the Christian heritage of this country and the founding fathers. Contrary to popular belief, they weren't the majority deists or agnostics. read their own writings. That's simply not true. And I'm not going to tell somebody to believe that. I say, look at their writings themselves and read what they said about it. But yes, one of the most, or probably the most quoted source of information when they were at the Constitutional Convention was the Bible, the Judeo-Christian Bible. So are we saying that we want the government to force people to pay taxes to a certain church or religion? Absolutely not. The Constitution Party would be devoutly against that. We'd be the first ones in line fighting against that. But to acknowledge God in our heritage, absolutely.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation with the gentleman from the Constitution Party of North Carolina, an introduction to the Constitution Party for you, right after the Wall Street Journal report brought to you each and every day by Tyson's Furniture, just up the valley in Black Mountain.